This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
I'm Jonathan O'Brien, and I guess I got into drag about 6 years ago. It had been something that I was kind of interested in from a young age. I sort of first got interested in it in high school when we were studying feminist art, and I felt like I connected with a lot of what the feminist artists were trying to say in the 70s. So I decided that if I was ever going to be a drag queen, my name would be Judy Chicago, after the feminist artist who did The Dinner Party. That's probably one of her most famous pieces.
What were some of the things that you keyed into at high school? What were they saying, the feminists?
You know, anyone can be anyone. So, like, Cindy Sherman posing in a lot of her self-portraits as all these different stereotypes of women and sort of deconstructing them and reconstructing them. And so if you're able to deconstruct an identity, you can create a new one out of anything. And that's kind of what drag is like for me.
So what age were you thinking those thoughts?
I had sort of gender, sexuality issues in high school where I was sort of thinking about, you know, what it means to be gay and what it means to be gay if you were raised Catholic, what it means to be a boy. Like, I'd wear pigtails to school and see how people reacted. Like, and so I just tried to, like, you know, destabilize boundaries that I found quite restrictive in growing up in white middle-class Papakura, and just started, yeah, playing around with how I dressed and how I thought. And it wasn't really until I went to university and moved into Auckland City that I met other people who were gay and were queer and were performers, and I figured that drag was the kind of performance direction that I wanted to go in.
Just going back to your high school days, how did other people react to what you were doing?
My teachers all thought that I was lovely and troubled. And most of, like, other guys at school were just like, oh, you're a fag. And I was like, yes, but what does that mean? And so I was kind of trying to get more out of them, and it didn't really work. But I had a fairly supportive school counsellor who was like, don't worry, you know, things will sort themselves out when you leave high school. And now the college that I was at was Rose Hill College, and now they have a really good queer sexuality support system in place.
So at that age, how do you have that kind of inner strength to kind of challenge stereotypes?
I don't know. Where does anyone get their inner strength from, really? Mum? I had a pretty fierce mother and a fierce grandmother. I had lots of really strong female role models. So I lived with my mum for a long time after she kicked Dad out. And then I lived with my grandmother and grandfather for a while. My grandmother was this bolshy Jewish Holocaust survivor who was, yeah, she lived inner strength, so it was probably a lot from watching people like her.
And so from those high school experiences, what did you take out of that?
That people react to difference in different ways, and I guess I learned more about how I responded to their reactions. So if their reactions were negative, did it actually affect me? And by the time I was finishing high school, it didn't, and that sort of set me up for just being comfortable with doing whatever I felt like doing, I guess.
How did your family react?
Oh, when I first came out to my dad, I was probably 18, and he said to me, like, he was all fine with it. He was like, yes, we've sort of, you know, known that for a while, but do you want to be a woman? And I was like, no, Dad, I'm gay. I like the idea of two cocks together. That's the point. And then 2 years later, I started doing drag. And I didn't really know how he'd react to that because of the question he'd asked when I first came out. So one night, I was living with him at the time, and one night he and my stepmother had gone out, so I was just, you know, practicing makeup at home and just got into full drag, and then I was just sitting in the lounge watching TV, and they came home from being out, and I was just in there with a big blonde wig and bright blue dress, and Dad just walked in and looked at me and said, "Hi, son, so will we be seeing you like this more often?" And I just said, "Yes," and it was fine.
So how do you see drag? Is it a performance thing, or is it something more?
Originally, when I first started doing it, I guess it was something more. I wasn't really sure of my own gender situation and what being male or female really meant for me. And I'd been doing lots of theatre as well, so I sort of mixed the issues together and found myself a drag mother and started doing drag regularly, and then it kind of became a shield or a suit of armour. And I think that's something for a lot of drag queens, is that being in drag is kind of like, you know, putting up a defence almost, or a mask affords you a lot of confidence and distance from people. So, you know, I didn't have to worry about whether or not a guy liked me because I wasn't out looking for sex. I was out being glamorous and tragic and outrageous. And at that point, in the early point when I was first doing drag, like, my drag character was quite distinct from me as Jonathan, and I guess I wasn't sure who I wanted to be, and so sometimes I'd spend a lot of time in drag and maybe go to university in drag. And then as my life progressed and I got more experience with relationships and with sex, I kind of realized that, you know, being male was what I wanted to be, and being a man with a man was where I was most comfortable. And drag just became, yeah, more of a performance space, a hobby, something fun to do, something to entertain people with, something to entertain myself with. And I didn't really need to hold it as that sort of magic feather. I didn't need to, you know, hold on to drag to be able to fly.
I'm wondering if you could define drag. How would you define drag?
I guess drag to me would mean a member of one sex performing and presenting themselves in an over-the-top manner representative of the gender traditionally recognized as the opposite to what they were born into.
But there's an element of performance. Yeah. Is that the key thing, is it?
Yeah, and definitely perform. Well, I mean, even if you're not on stage, it's still a performance. Like, you don't just go out as a drag king or a drag queen. You go out and you are performing. You're performing in a character, really.
How long did it take for you to find your drag character?
Well, I found three. But it didn't take long at all, really. Like, I had a really good drag mother, her name was Esther C. And she was a very good makeup artist, and very confident and very camp and very hilarious and witty, and I just emulated a lot of her behaviours and styles and sort of found myself quite quickly and ended up winning Miss Drag Auckland about 8 months after I started doing drag. So that was a lot. And yeah, I found that my interests in, you know, like high camp and old Broadway musicals and kitsch, glamour and tragic heroes and all the sorts of like gay archetypal kind of characters that a lot of the nightclub scene were unfamiliar with or weren't into, sort of fell into, all those things fell into my basket and nobody else was really doing them at the time. So it, yeah, firmed up a character for me quite nicely. And then as I just experimented with different looks and different styles of music and different styles of makeup and different eras and different aspects of performance and personality, I found other people to be Judy Chicago's alter egos.
Just before we get on to a description of the personas, can you tell me how you go about finding a drag mother?
So I'd been on the gay scene in Auckland for about 2 years before I started doing drag, and I'd seen all the drag queens around and I had no idea how to sort of get into doing that. I didn't just want to turn up in a wig and an ugly dress made of curtains with a bit of makeup smeared on my face, because you'd just, you know, get laughed out of town. So one of my friends was friends with a couple of drag queens, and I met them at her 21st birthday, and she introduced me to them, and I got their number and then hung out with them, and then, you know, just said, yeah, I'd love for you to put me in drag. And so she did. You just find someone and latch yourself to them.
What was that first experience like?
It was heady. It was mixed with a lot of drugs and alcohol and heels that I couldn't walk in properly and a dress from an op shop, but amazing hair and makeup. And I just felt like a movie star and felt like I had access to anywhere I wanted to go and could get away with anything.
So describe for me the your personas.
Okay, well, Judy Chicago is sort of my, like, base character, and she is more or less me now, really, in drag, but, you know, exaggerated, so she's a lot camper, and she's a bit fruity, and she likes jazz, and Judy Garland, and floral, and big hair, big hair. And Gertrude Stein is quite ugly, but clever and interested in cooking, and hideous 70s prints and curly hair and glasses. And Nylon Polymer is kind of a bit of a trip and is just usually in whiteface and bizarre postmodern blends of things like laundry baskets and Marie Antoinette hair and Care Bears. And the three of them get along well in my head.
Do you ever find they're taking you over?
No, not at all. I did used to feel that Judy Chicago was taking over when I was, you know, going through a bit of an identity crisis. And, you know, if I was feeling down or whatever, I would fall back into that confident persona that I had constructed, and that confident persona just happened to be a drag queen. So sometimes, you know, I'd not feel like I could go out to a club not in drag because I didn't feel confident enough, or I didn't feel pretty enough, or whatever.
So talk to me about identity crises.
I guess for a while I was living with my parents who lived, well, I was living with my father who lived on the shore. So I had to come into town to socialize with anyone. And I had a lot of different groups of friends. And I felt like I was a different person with each of these different groups of friends. And I was trying to work out who I was without them and who I felt comfortable being and who I wanted to be and who I wanted to be seen as being. And at that point, I just didn't really feel like being Jonathan. I guess I didn't really know who he was, but I had a more definite idea of who Judy Chicago was. So she kind of took over. And yeah, for a lot of other drag queens I've spoken to, they feel like their drag personas can take over a lot as well. And sometimes you just got to put the drag in a bag and hide her.
Now, drag wasn't confined to those personas because you were also doing some study around that area as well, weren't you?
Yeah, I was doing a degree in psychology and linguistics, so I was quite interested in gender and language. And I was also the cultural affairs officer for the Students Association. I got Judy Chicago to run as that position, which just made it a little bit more fun for me and for anyone else, really. And I did a research project on how drag queens in Auckland spoke and how that differed from how they would speak as gay men or how they would speak as men in general, and just looked at the intersectionality of the different cultural groups around Auckland and the influences that they all had on drag culture. So like, there's a strong Polynesian and Māori influence on a lot of just some of the phrases that people say, and that's probably because there's a high population of Polynesian and Māori people who are involved in the queer community in Auckland, especially in the performance industry as well. And that's where a lot of drag queens, like some of the best drag queens in New Zealand, are Polynesian and Māori. And just also looking at like the influence of African-American drag on, or African-American gay culture on gay culture in New Zealand, and how that affects the way drag queens speak and act and the looks that they adopt as well. And then looking at sort of our trans-Tasman relationship with Sydney, and Sydney has a very sort of polished, glamorous drag image, and at the moment Auckland's looking a lot more like Sydney drag-wise.
So can you give me some examples in terms of speech or looks?
I guess there's just all sorts of little things, like a lot of drag queens will say gnirl instead of girl, and it's a gay thing as well, and kia ora sister, and talking about someone being whānau, like, oh, is she whānau, is she gay, is he family, and little palari phrases like raya and uber raya when you're talking about a wig, and zhuzhing and trolling and puraganosi. There's just lots of little idiosyncrasies that strong personalities have that rub off on others as well. Like, I know Robina has a way of talking that is very loud and scary and powerful, and a lot of people put that on sometimes.
Just for the uninitiated, could you go back through some of those words and define what they are?
So a puraganosi is a drag queen's pussy, and it's usually covered up by three pairs of stockings. An uber raya is a lace front wig. Trolling, trolling for trade. Stalking for boys to have sex with, or John's clients, whatever. Cracking it, basically prostitution.
Is prostitution a big thing in the drag scene?
Not really, no. I don't know many drag queens who actually work as prostitutes in drag, just because it's so much effort to get in drag. You don't want it to all, get smudged off by some big, eager man. It's probably not really worth the trouble. I mean, doing drag is relatively expensive if you're doing it well, I suppose. Although in saying that, you can actually do drag really cheaply and amazingly. It just depends on what look you're going for, really. The $2 shop in the warehouse are two of most drag queens' favourite shops, I think. But Yeah, no, I know a few girls who do it sometimes, maybe for a new wig or whatever. But I don't think it's a large aspect of drag culture.
So what were your findings in your research?
I guess I just found the importance of understanding the way other drag queens spoke so that you could speak their language and be part of the community, and so reinforcing solidarity through this stylized form of discourse. And, you know, it's a sense of belonging, it's a sense of exclusivity almost, and a sense of family. And I think, you know, for a lot of young gay men coming into the gay scene, they're kind of lost, and you see this sort of drag sisterhood as a ready-made group that you can be adopted into, and you just learn the customs and the practices, and you have a family.
So it's quite friendly. There's not a competitive edge.
It's I'd say it's very competitive, but that competition in itself reinforces the friendships. So, you know, you're constantly trying to make yourself better, and your friends are trying to make you better and make themselves better, and you give each other a hard time to make each other try harder. So it can be really bitchy, but it's in jest most of the time, and you know you can rely on your sisters if you need to.
Have you found that it's mostly gay men that do drag, or do straight men do drag as well?
Well, yeah, a lot of straight men do drag. I mean, with the Queen of the Whole Universe in New Zealand, that kind of presents an opportunity for a whole lot of people to do drag in a really structured and safe environment. So, you know, they go through rehearsals, they get told how to dress or what style to dress, they have someone else doing their makeup for them. And I guess people who do drag occasionally aren't really drag queens as such, because they're not immersed in the culture and the practice, but it's something they can do for fun. And I know with Queen of the Whole Universe, we've had large numbers of straight men and straight women and gay women and mostly gay men come through and perform as queens every year. And the whole bio queen movement is growing all over the world. So a bio queen is a woman who dresses up as a drag queen. So, you know, you could almost say Lady Gaga is a bio queen. But probably my favourite bio queen would be Phonique, who's an amazing performance artist. She's involved in the Tranny Shack group in the States, and she's just fierce. And we've also got a few bio queens in New Zealand as well. You know, it's just girls kind of seeing that hyper-femininity is this arena that isn't really open to them very often anymore. And they want to, you know, draw their eyebrows up high and put ridiculous amounts of eyeshadow on and giant wigs. And why have an excuse to do it when you can just go out and be a queen?
What do you think is the biggest thrill for you doing drag?
I have the most fun in drag when I'm with other drag queens and performing. So getting the buzz of, you know, of rehearsing and putting together a show and then being on stage with the people you've been working with or in front of people and being a spectacle. Yeah, a lot of it is just about making something fabulous and having a good time doing it.
Is drag all about the kind of present and the now, or does it have a history? Are people aware of a history in drag?
Yeah, definitely. There's a long, long history. I've done a lot of research on the history of drag and looked into different forms of drag all around the world and different forms of, you know, gender transgression or subversion or whatever. And I find all of that really interesting, whereas other drag queens are just like, Britney's so fucking hot, I want to look like her right now. And that's cool, you know. You don't need the history to be amazing. But it's cool to know, it's fantastic to know that even in New Zealand we have a strong local history of drag going back about 50 years.
And how is that passed down if you hadn't gone and researched? I mean, is it within the community, within drag queens themselves, they're passing that history down?
In Wellington, we lack a lot of drag history now because most of the older drag queens have moved on. And so we've got a lot of orphan drag queens or motherless drag queens. But like in Auckland, there's a fairly steady generational handing down of the knowledge of drag and knowledge of the girls who came before. And, you know, we have things like the Cartier Trust and that sort of thing that recognise that, you know, these people have been pretty fabulous and they've been around for a while, and the knowledge of who these people are is, yeah, it's definitely around. Like, most of the drag queens around today would know about performances in the early 90s and 80s, the studio and staircase and things like that.
And how is that history seen? Are those older drag queens and their memories, that they celebrated, or is it, are they set up as something that was kind of weird? Or
yeah, again, it all depends on which drag queen is around. Like, some older drag queens are just seen as a bit weird, and then some of them are celebrated for being completely outrageous and of their time or before their time, and some of them are still the most fierce bitches around.
Do you think there's any kind of age limit for people in doing drag?
Definitely not. Like, Peter Taylor's still doing drag, and he's probably like 100 years old by now. And he's still fabulous. And the youngest person I know who started doing drag was probably about 14. But there's also, you know, blurry lines with transgender issues as well, you know, like some people start out as a drag queen or doing drag and or cross-dressing or whatever, and then they start doing it more often, and then that person becomes who they are and who they've want to be or who they've always wanted to be. So there's, you know, yeah, there are strong links between drag communities and transgender communities and people and individuals.
What do you think the hardest part of doing drag is?
For me, probably the hardest part has been juggling drag with a partner. You know, gay men are gay men because they're attracted to men. And my partner is not attracted to drag queens. Even though he met me when I was in drag, he was, you know, just keen to see me as a boy. And that's who he likes. And so when I'm in drag, he kind of feels like I'm a different person and not the person that he's in love with. But he understands that I'm still there. I'm just playing. So yeah, juggling my sisters with my boyfriend has probably been the trickiest part of being a drag queen.
And the funnest part?
The funnest part is stumbling down to a kebab shop with a bunch of drag queens whose lips have been getting bigger and bigger all night, and gorging yourself before getting a taxi home, and just the looks on everyone's faces around you with these three tragic queens, or four tragic queens, or two, or five, whatever, just looking completely completely conspicuous and out of place.
So talk to me about reactions, like when you're walking around in town. Do they vary from city to city?
Yeah, reactions definitely vary from city to city and street to street as well. Like, if you're going down K Road, it's kind of known that that's where drag queens live. And if you're going to K Road on a weekend night, you're going to bump into a drag queen. So you're on their turf pretty much. And yeah, I never really had it. I think once somebody said to me, "What makes you think you can get away with wearing that?" And I just said, "Because I can." And they were like, "Oh, okay." And that was fine. And then in Palmerston North, I did a gig with a friend. And the gig was at, I think it was at Club Q, I think that's what it's called there. And so when we'd finished our gig, we're like, right, let's go hit the town. And we were denied from about four or five different clubs because we didn't meet the dress code. And we weren't even wearing anything particularly outrageous or skimpy. And, yeah, it was just clear that we weren't welcome there. And we ended up finding one place that would let us in, but the reactions weren't particularly positive. And then in Wellington, like on Cuba Street, pretty much everything's fine. And then you walk down Courtney Place and you get called faggot by a bunch of guys and beautiful by their girlfriends. So, yeah, it just depends on who you bump into and who's out at the time.
Do you get more reaction in drag or just as a boy?
Definitely get more reactions in drag. I mean, as a boy, I mostly just wear black and grey and blue. in drag, I mostly wear purple and fuchsia and lime and bright colours. And, yeah, people really... people really appreciate it in most places that I end up in. Like, a lot of people just come up and be like, you know, thank you for just adding a little bit of colour. And that's really nice because that's kind of a big part of the reason why drag queens do it is because they want to bring a bit of colour to something and make people happy and make sure that people are having fun. And sometimes that fun isn't welcome and... That's fine too. In Wellington, there's not much of a drag scene, and the gay community isn't really that keen on drag and drag performances. And I just think that's because there's no real like strong drag coordinator. Like, we used to have Polly Filler living in Wellington, and she was great at holding a drag community together and organising events and being a great role model for people. And when she left, I think a lot of that just dissipated. And so Wellington, I guess, is waiting for its next true diva to stand up and unite the queens.
So we were talking just before about drag mothers, and I'm wondering, are you now a drag mother? Do you have drag children?
Well, now that I'm an elderly 6-year-old drag queen... I do have drag children. I didn't for a long time because I didn't really know anyone who sort of fitted what I would want in a daughter. But one of my dear friends who shared a lot of my interests in gender and performance and colour and film and theatre and music, he had, you know, watched me do drag for about 2 years, and I sort of suggested that maybe he would be interested, and I was living with him at the time, and he was just like, oh, yes, yes, oh, God, yes, I want to be your drag daughter, please. And, you know, I wanted someone I could share my style with and share the films and history that had sort of inspired me, like a lot of John Waters films and Andy Warhol's films and the Drag Queens of New York that I was really interested in, and the Cockettes. And so, yeah, I just showed him all of that. And then one night I was like, right, here's a bunch of old costumes that you can have, and did his face and showed him how to do her face and put her in a few wigs and started taking her out. So... yeah, I have my own little daughter, and her name is Gaia Octavia Seizure, and she's very much an Earth Mother in sequence. And I also have a step-drag daughter as well, whose own mother passed away, and so I sort of adopted her. I guess for me, being a drag queen has been really useful in finding out who I am and finding out what I can do and who I can be. And I made a lot of really, really, really good friends through drag, where sometimes all we have in common to begin with is
the fact that we want to dress up in ridiculous costumes and run around town screaming, and progressed from there. So, yeah, I just really appreciate everything that I've got from my involvement with drag and drag performers and the performers associated with that culture.
What's your ultimate drag act?
I really like drag in theatre and acting and comedy. Like, I really like the drag that happens in New York. A lot of it's a little bit edgy, and it's less defined in its boundaries of what is drag. Like, some drag queens will say that, you know, to be a drag queen, you've got to be wearing a wig, or you've got to be wearing heels or whatever. And then others will be like, all you need is some lip gloss and some bright eyeshadow, and who gives a fuck about wearing tits, whatever. And yeah, I like those destabilized performance types, yeah. But I also really like the high glamour that happens in kind of female impersonator shows, where people dress up as Liza Minnelli or Cher or anything like that. One of my favorite shows that I ever did was, I did a half male, half female, half man, half woman cabaret act for the Auckland Festival in 2005. And that was a lot of fun because it was quite challenging actually creating a male character who had to be just as extreme as the drag side. And so, you know, I already had Judy Chicago established as a persona, but Jack London needed to find himself. And so he just became this revolting, sort of sleazy, Jewish used car salesman, wannabe stand-up comedian. And so for that show, Judy sang and Jack interrupted her and kept trying to tell jokes. And it was in a really intimate space in the Winter Garden in the Civic. And I really enjoyed being involved in something like a cabaret like that.